Oh, listeners, if you were a watcher, maybe you'd get to see me trying to get cat hairs off my nose quite regularly.
I want your joke to be something about noses or cats or something.
I'd probably scroll really quickly and try and find you one. But instead, I'm going to ask you, what do you think we call people who sleep in their socks?
I got half an idea, but I'm not going to go there because it could be wrong.
So you're not even going to try?
Oh, I didn't know it was that kind of a joke. Tiny?
Yes, you nailed it.
G'day, I'm Woz.
And I'm Nick, sometimes Coxie, mostly Nick.
This is the Tradies in Business podcast, and we're here to share a bunch of tips, ideas, tactics that you can put in place to get change happening in your trade business right now.
If you're really lucky, we're going to entertain you with a few mum jokes, and more importantly, a bunch of fantastic guests that will educate you in all things you need to know about trade business, but we do promise to do it with a whole bunch of fun along the way.
I'm a self-confessed idiot, so strap yourself in and enjoy another episode. See, that's my weird brain that just listened literally to what you said. People who sleep in their socks. I'm like, you'd have to be tiny. Oh my gosh, I got one of your riddles, Coxie.
Hooray.
It's been how many years now?
Far too long.
We're finally learning something. G'day, listeners. Welcome to the Tradies in Business podcast. Another cracking episode, another amazing joke. And better than that, we've got a guest to pull all this together and deliver some value to your ears. We're joined by Rakesh Nan from Aureus Financial today. Rakesh, can you give me a score out of 10 for how I've pronounced your last name, mate?
Bang on, man. 10 out of 10.
Today's going to be a good day. I've got Coxie's joke right. I've nailed your last name pronunciation. It's just, I'm going to quit now. I'm going for a beer.
Two for two, man.
All right, Coxie's going to take over from here so I don't make an absolute meal of it, which is generally what happens after I score a couple of shots like that. Now, Rakesh, you're here. Listeners, get ready for this. You're going to get super excited about this episode. Rakesh, you're going to talk about tax, cash flow, and accounting, aren't you?
Definitely am. But hopefully we don't bore the listeners with this topic. It's pretty dry. It's not something that business owners really want to be listening to, particularly if you've got other more exciting things to do. But hopefully there's some nuggets here which listeners can take away and apply in their business straight away.
Drier than the millennium drought, this subject.
I don't know. I had a chat with Rakesh recently around, well, we didn't stray too much into all of this. We spoke broadly around bookkeeping. And it wasn't dry at all. In fact, Rakesh, I'm going to set you up here now, Rakesh. You've got to come through with goods. Don't let me down. He does a pretty good yarn. He's got there's lots of good stories in his back pocket, plenty of client examples he can share with us that make for some very interesting listening. So I think we'll be all right, listeners. Stick with it.
Righto. Well, we've set the bar pretty high, Rakesh.
Challenge accepted. Hopefully, I don't ramble on. If I do, folks, please rein me back in because I have a tendency to.
You're in good company here.
Oh, no. We have to behave ourselves today, Rakesh, because we've stacked our calendar and need to race off. So let's get stuck in, mate. Our listeners tell us they really like to know the people that we interview on the show. So who are you, Rakesh?
I'm an African-born, I have Indian heritage in me, apparently, though I had been to India first time in my life in 2022, never going back there. tell you that. I suppose my dad was a mechanical engineer. He had a workshop at one stage where he ran a few trucks. He had a fleet of them. He then dabbled in a bit of mining. And for the topics we're going to talk about today, fell on his face. And I don't mean any disrespect by that, but he didn't do the right thing. Well, he didn't have the necessary guidance or system in place in order to make the right decisions along the way. And it's very common for a lot of business owners to go down that route where they, I'm good at this. I'll start a business because old mate that I'm working for doesn't really do a good job. I can do better than him and I'll keep more of that money for myself. Then you bring on employees, then you realize you can't just service the same clients all the time. Then you've got periods where people aren't paying you. Like, we'd go months at a time where there was no cash coming in. So you're borrowing money for that 3-month period. You then get paid, you're paying all of your debts, and you're back to square one. And I thought it was isolated to our family only, and came to Australia 21 years ago, studied my undergrad and then did a master's. And when I started working in the accounting field, I quickly realized that this is common for most businesses, regardless of geographic location. So that's, I suppose, what inspired me to go out and start my own practice. Working in bigger accounting firms, you quickly realize that they see their clients. Obviously, this is a bit of a generalization. Not every accounting firm is like this, but most of them see their clients as, for want of a better phrase, a pulse with a checkbook.
Yep.
And, you know, they then get incentivized to drag their feet on certain work so that they can charge more, because it's all hourly billing. And I left public practice and I joined a virtual CFO, and we started doing things completely different, where everything was fixed fee based on the engagement, and we were doing all this cool stuff, which listeners may not relate to, but we started looking at cash flow forecasts and reporting and doing dashboards and all of those kind of things, which I hadn't previously done too much of. Before, it was all looking back, you know, what happened in the last year, let's get the tax done, give it to the client and smile and hope that they don't notice the big tax bill that we're giving them, which that's like a slap in the face. You're paying us to do the work, and then we're telling you got to pay more money on top of it. I think the biggest misconception is around the whole, what accounting basis is the client using? Is it cash or is it accrual or invoiced? And that concept in itself, I think there were a few people that might have cried on the way back to their office or their premises, because you tell them one thing, that, oh, you know, you've made all of this profit for the year, and then when they realize that there's actually no cash to pay the tax bill that results from it, it becomes somewhat of a worry, and it can affect families' livelihood. Prior to coming to Australia, I had no idea how the tax system worked, even in Zimbabwe. So when I see him get money, like back there, bank accounts at the time weren't really something that people used too much. So the concept of cashies, that's something I'm very familiar with. He'd come home with this plastic bag full of these bundles of money. And I'm like, cool. Maybe we can get a pair of Nikes or something, but little did I know that money was already spent before we even received it. And that brings me to where I'm now, where I've joined a bigger business, which is more aligned with the concepts that I value, which is pretty much giving business owners back their time. So creating time freedom for them. Alleviating a lot of the stress that they would normally go through in business. So getting that peace of mind, and then financial freedom follows as a result of those two. And when I joined Aureus Financial, that's pretty much the vision that they have is very much aligned with my long-term goals. So that is a no-brainer for me. Hence where I am today. I've left out the part where I started my own business and I went through all of these challenges that business owners go through. Paying the tax man and accounting for your GST. Our training essentially just told us that, you know, your debits and your credits, that's all you got to remember, and you'll be fine. And so going through that process for almost 5 years, and, you know, managing my own business, having employees, dealing with workflow issues, pricing challenges, it's probably painted a better picture for me when having a conversation with business owners, particularly trade-specific business.
Yeah, having that, well, I say real world, I have never seen a business running in a laboratory, but yeah, that actual on the ground experience of running your own business. And I think stuffing it up, Coxie and I have a fairly decent sized collection of errors that we've both made in our businesses over the years. And I think that gives us the ability to perhaps have some more foresight,
and be able to predict more things, because when you've made those mistakes, you can then predict where things might go wrong beforehand. It's a bit like those of you listening to this who are tradies on the tools. G'day to any tradie wives and partners who are listening to the podcast as well. But for tradies who are on the tools, that's what an experienced tradesperson has. They've made all the mistakes, or so many of them, that they can see something that's going to go wrong before it goes wrong. And I guess with the combination of your business experience, Rakesh, and the actual theoretical knowledge, you're able to help people navigate a little better. Wow, I should put a collared shirt on. I'm starting to use big words. We're talking about accounting and I start using big words automatically.
Wait, can I counter that and bring us back to something that's a little bit more interesting? And I'll tell you a little bit of a story. It's about a book I read when I was in high school, probably halfway through high school. It was about a woman. I quickly came to realize that it was about a prostitute. And we were talking, the basic premise of the book was that you could read all of the books in the world and gain all of this knowledge. And it's as useful as a chocolate teapot, unless you actually apply it. And, you know, her basic argument was that she had more experience, and hence why she could charge a better fee for her services. I'll get out of the filth now and come back to...
I want to know what the title of the book is, because I reckon half of our listeners want to go and get it and read it.
Oh, it's written in that old English, you know, the Anglo-Saxon kind of English.
Wow.
It's called The Wife of Bath.
Spelled
B-A-T-H-E.
Writing that down, Rakesh.
Basic premise was your experience teaches you more than your academic or your smarts that you acquire from books.
Yep.
And first-hand knowledge, I think that was my biggest teacher, is the 5 years that I spent doing stuff on my own and learning from those mistakes, which I'm pretty sure you can relate to as well.
Unfortunately, I wish I could say we don't, but we do. And perhaps that's why we do what we do, Rakesh. I would love to know if there's a particular, say, three examples of the mistakes that trade business owners typically make when they first start out in business.
I'll give you the first one, which is probably the most common one that comes up. And that is, how should I structure my business? And the go-to is sole trader, because you speak to someone and they say, you got to set up this and, you know, have a company and have a trust. And they complicate things more than they should. Mm-hmm. Ideally, when you're looking at setting up your business, a sole trader might be the best thing for you at that point in time, particularly given financial resources and your knowledge of the industry and so on. Ideally, you want to have that foundation set up the right way from the start, and sometimes it's not possible. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and trade as a sole trader for maybe a year or so, and then go back and review how you're actually structured, because things change. I think the only thing constant in life is change and death, and maybe taxes. Mm-hmm. That's debatable.
They keep going up, so they're not constant.
My train of thought there.
Structure.
Company structure.
Oh, yeah. So the structures. Ideally, you want to review that at least after the first 12 months of trading, because things change. You may even have a bumper year and then you've got a tax problem, because as a sole trader, you have a sliding scale of tax.
Hmm.
Whereas if you structured yourself as a company, you have a flat rate of tax. You have certainty of income yourself, because you're putting yourself on a wage. And you know, there's a separate legal entity. You can structure it in order to protect your assets and separate your risk and so on. I won't go into the nuances, otherwise we'll start boring the listener of the game. And then the other option is you could go down the route of setting your business up as a trust. Mm-hmm. But a trust, I like to think of as a bottomless bucket. Mm-hmm. Pretty much your revenue goes in, your expenses come out, and then you have the profit that falls out the bottom. And normally that would fall upon the individual that is running the business. So, for example, the tradie and their spouse or partner, and maybe some family members. And you still then end up with that marginal tax issue. So what happens if your profit is then over $200,000 for the year? You've had a bumper period. You've got massive profits to distribute, and you have to distribute those every year. So that creates another tax problem. And you can get around that, but the max rate of tax that you can probably get away with there is 30%. So our go-to structure is essentially it gives you the flexibility for longer term growth, but you'd have your trading entity go through a corporate entity, so company. You'd have your shareholding within a trust structure, and you'd have a corporate trustee that acts as pretty much that manages that trust fee. That's the first one. The second issue is probably the business owner not paying themselves. They take a hit themselves, and then they start funding the business out of their own savings, and then it defeats the purpose of being in business in the first place. I'll do this as a short-term workaround rather than getting some sort of formal finance arrangement put in place. Something I neglected to touch on with the sole trader structure is when you're looking at getting some sort of finance, if they see that you're a sole trader, it's very difficult to get finance in place without having to jump through massive hoops. Whereas a corporate structure allows you to get that. There's fewer, less red tape in that process. So with the business owner not paying themselves, they're then starting the cycle. The cycle goes, start business. You're working in the business and you're paying yourself the least. You've got employees, you've got suppliers, and you're allowing your clients, payment terms that are unreasonable. And then your cash conversion cycle becomes compromised because you're technically kicking the can forward and you're funding the business out of your own pocket. There's going to come a time where your personal financial life is going to come close to breaking or caving in on itself because you can't sustain it. You've got a partner or a spouse who doesn't see you ever. You're constantly in the business. There's never any cash in the household. You're always scrimping and scraping at, pennies here. And you're compromising on lifestyle in an effort to push your business forward. And you get 3 years into it. I think the statistics, these are fairly dated statistics. I think they date back to like 2021. But ASIC reckons 78% of businesses fail within the first 3 years. And primarily because of those two reasons. Being cash flow and poor financial management practices. And one of those poor financial management practices is the business owner not paying themselves appropriately. And the third one, I think, is the cash flow management within a business. So many times people just look at the bank account and they're like, oh, we've got money in there, we're fine. And they don't factor in that is debts that need to be paid, particularly those relating to employees and the tax office. They allow their customers to take ages to pay, and then they're funding the business out of their own pocket. So you start work day one, you invoice at day 30, and then you're allowing the client another 30 days or 60 days in some cases. So you're footing the bill for that whole period. Something's got to break at some point. And then you see those people throwing the towel and, come start of the fourth year, they're like, mate, we're hanging up the gloves. We're going back to a job, less stress. And, there's certainty with a job. I've heard the word job referred to as just over broke in the past. That's my mentality ever since starting business. I'm like, with the business, you have so many levers you can pull. You can, if I wanted to go out and make $100,000 tomorrow, I just need to find the work, but you can do it. In a job, you're stuck. You might have non-compete things and that kind of thing. But I think real financial freedom comes by having a business as your vehicle to grow that wealth.
Rakesh, why do you think people get those three things so wrong at the start?
I think it's probably the wrong I wouldn't say the wrong guidance, but lack of knowledge of what should be done. I've heard it described that we go through school so that the system continues working, and you know, we have people in the jobs that fulfill lifestyle needs. I think the schools, like, have you ever wondered why they never teach us about making money or building wealth? Something's wrong with the schooling system. And I'm not having a dig at just the Australian schooling system, but growing up, we were never taught about managing money, provisioning for rainy days and that kind of thing. Mm. It was just feast and famine. And you're always looking out for that next paycheck or the next, you know, when your customer's going to pay you. That I think is the biggest reason, is that there was a lack of education within the industry, whereas nowadays there's a lot more, there's a wealth of information actually. I think ASIC's Money Smart website is a decent resource if you're just looking to start. Once you get your personal stuff in order, then you look at getting the business stuff in order. Because people tend to look at their business as something completely different to their personal. And you occasionally see someone with a strong business, and you look at their personal finances, and they're all over the place. Whereas the two work in unison. Your business generally funds your lifestyle. Mm. Well, that's the way that I think it should be.
Mm. Won't get any disagreement from us, Rakesh. And I'm going to stay away from the conspiracy theory stuff that everybody knows. I love to hop on that choo-choo train and talk about the establishment. But anyway, let's move on. So there is a lot of information out there. I agree with you, Rakesh. And being as old as I am, I have seen the explosion in information, and yet there hasn't been a commensurate improvement in people's understanding and application of that. It's just, there's just a bunch of information. I think people still end up confused about what to do. They still make the same mistakes, which is great for people like you. And I guess for us, because, you know, we're working hard to change that for a lot of individuals and a lot of businesses. How do people sort through that information? You know, I mean, Google seems to be the source of all knowledge these days, but how do I avoid the crap advice and figure out who's talking the legit stuff?
That's actually a really good question, which off the cuff, I don't have a well-thought-out response for you. But I'd say if you're speaking to someone and, look, if it looks like a cow and it sounds like a cow and it smells like a cow, then it's probably a cow. I'll give you my take on how I would approach the situation.
Yeah.
Generally, if I'm looking for a service provider, I'm looking for someone who is not necessarily jumping to the price. They're trying to understand my problem at, I wouldn't say a granular base, granular level, but at least at a fundamental level where, you know, you can identify what are the causes or at least likely causes of those issues. And then they're providing you with options around the solutions that are available to rectify those. If I could drive from Brisbane to maybe the Gold Coast and have a decent conversation with them, outside of just talking shop, I think that's a good gauge. Don't get me wrong. Some people, they talk a good game, and then when it's time to deliver, they don't actually come through. Those would be probably the three things I'd look out for, is someone who's vested in a positive outcome and delivering value for you as a service provider. They will provide you with options based on your budget, and you can get along with it. Because ideally, that's someone you want to build a long-term relationship with, not have a transactional relationship with. Because if you're doing it from a transactional perspective, they are likely going to just be throwing invoices at you left, right, and center, rather than, here's how this will work. This is what the investment is or the pricing. And does that sound good? Yes or no? Okay, how do we work around your budget to provide those said services? That's how I approach it.
I want the people on my financial team to have the same goals I have. So I shared with you on the Trady Wife Life podcast, my accountant has become like my other dad. He's really invested in our outcomes. He's been on a big journey with us and now works with all of my family. He's not just a one and done. He works with all of us. And I think that that's important for the integrity of the information that I receive. But the important point I want to make here, Rakesh, is he takes a lot of time. He always comes to my home. I don't actually go to his office. He always comes to my home. He always stays longer than he's going to stay because he wants to understand what I foresee to be the outcomes for the next 1, 2, 3, and 5 years so that decisions can be made with my goals in mind. And so I'd love to ask you, what do you wish your clients were telling you? Because often I can't tell you how many times I've heard our clients or tradies in general say, oh, it's the accountant. They did this or they did that. And I just got this tax bill at the end of the year. But nobody's going in and understanding they need to be mindful about what they're sharing with their accountant. So the accountant's on the same page because you don't have a crystal ball. You've got no idea what I'm doing in my business unless I tell you or what my plans are or what my ideals are. I need to tell you that information. But there must be other things that you would love for your clients to be bringing to the table in those discussions.
So when we start with a new client or a prospect, for example, the first thing I'd normally start off the conversation with is, where are you now? Where would you like to be? And my job is to work out the how. Like, how are we going to get you there? And a lot of that, sometimes people don't even have the, they don't think beyond 12 months or even beyond a few months. So we try and map out that timeline. Yep. So you have a fairly good idea of where you want to be in 12 months. You have less of a fairly good idea of where you want to be in 3 years, 5 years, 10. Once you start to get to like the 15 and the 20-year mark, those are like question marks.
Mm-hmm.
So at Aureus, we try and encourage our clients to just map those out anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have this vision of owning a Porsche 911. And not because of the luxury and all of that, but just to tear the hell out of it, you know, if I have that kind of wealth, then, you know, that's okay by me. At least I can say I can tick that box as a bucket list item. And that is something I threw on my goal list just so that I could have it there. It might seem ridiculous now, and that's not something that will change. But if you have an annual review of that every year, you know that, you know, if something else comes up, life changes, you can always adjust. And if we're doing that with our clients, because we're at the coal, I like to think of ourselves as being at the coal face with them. We understand what needs to happen during the year because of those goals or because of having gone through that process. If you don't go through that process, then you're literally, it's a transaction. They're paying you to do the tax and then you're back to that. Here's your tax. Thanks for coming. We'll see you next year. And I don't know how much value we can add by looking at what's already happened. The damage is already done. If you try and amend that, then you're likely going to get in trouble with your authorities. So catching up with clients is, I've been known to be a bit of, I think we touched on this earlier, was where we've got to keep to time because I tend to be a bit of a jibber jabber, like a blabbermouth. And the same thing happens in client meetings because, you know, I'm supposed to be listening more than talking, but because I'm like so invested in the client's success, I'm throwing ideas at them and we run over time almost every time. And my assistant hates that because it then creates a domino effect and everyone else is then delayed. So the point I'm trying to get at here is if we are invested in our client's success, then it makes for a long-term relationship because it's not one where we're reporting on past stuff. We're encouraging communication. And if you're about to buy a vehicle or some equipment, what's the best way to do that? Should we, you know, are you going to buy it in the business or are you going to buy it in another entity? And why do you need to buy it in another entity? If you've got some IP in the business, what's the best way to protect that? Some people just put it all. I spoke to a guy last week. He had investments in the same entity he was trading his business out of. And I was like, do you know how risky this is? And then rectifying something that's already been done becomes so much more costly, not only because there's advisor fees involved, you might need some legal advice. There's also the tax implications of doing those things rather than, okay, let's have a quick chat. If it's something that is outside of scope of the services we're already providing you with, we can price that up for you and then we'll have a chat about exactly what that looks like outcome-wise. I think historically, accountants have done the work, then they invoice their clients, and then the client's like, what the hell is this? Why do I have to pay this? And then it leaves a bitter taste in your mouth and you just don't want to ask for advice ever again.
Hmm.
So I think it's just the way that it was done before is not the right way.
Hmm.
I don't do anything in business without asking my accountant before I do it. If I want to purchase a vehicle, if I want to travel for work, if I want to purchase another thing, tools or equipment or something that can be contributed to the business, it's a conversation with him first. I'm not so good at that personally. I'm going to be really honest. It's part of why I've moved my office upstairs so I can get all the parcels as they come in the door. Some things he doesn't need to know about, but the rest, I run past him first because he has an overall plan that we're all working towards. And I think this is an important point that I'm coming to. I don't need to know all of the details. I've got a broad overview, but I don't need to know all of the details. I just need to know that he's got my back. He's got people on his team that have my back. And if I want the answers to those questions, I just ask them. I get the answer and I can move forward while staying within the framework that he has for us to get where we want to be. And I think that this is the problem for lots of us. When we go to our accountants, we do one of two things. We put our head in the sand because we don't understand and we're ashamed and we don't want to put our hand up and say, I don't really know what you're talking about. Or we feel like we need to know all of the things, and learning all of the things becomes so overwhelming and it doesn't really change the value proposition of what we're trying to achieve. And so I think that it's okay for us all to play to our strengths and allow our financial professionals that we've chosen, providing we're comfortable with them, do what they need to do and ask the questions required when required, rather than trying to know all of that beforehand and make the decisions for ourselves. I don't have to. I've got someone else that does all of that for me. Is that a relationship you would encourage most people to have with their financial professionals?
Definitely. And while I don't abdicate, I prefer that, you know, the business owner doesn't abdicate that responsibility completely to their advisor or the board of advisors. It's good to have an understanding of exactly what's happening in the different departments or the different areas within their business.
Mm-hmm.
And if everyone thought of themselves as the CEO of their own life or the CEO of their own business, the different advisors and professionals involved in delivering that advice to them would become heads of department or like CFO, your CMO and your COO. And ideally, like when you think about, I'll use a well-known example here, Jeff Bezos, former CEO of Amazon. He didn't necessarily go and speak with everyone on the floor. He didn't even speak to the department heads. He was speaking to maybe 2-3 people at most. And that's how he gets all of the information that he needs in order to make the decisions within his business. And I feel, particularly in the trade space, owners of businesses and operators, they get stuck in the weeds of doing the day-to-day. And that's why they never get that growth, because they're very concerned about, have you done this right? And have you done that right? Then when it comes to selling their business or getting to a point where they're looking to exit, they're so ingrained in the day-to-day, the business is so reliant on them. And you do a valuation and the valuation comes in lower than expected. And you ask when the question is asked why, they're like, well, it's heavily reliant on you. No systems and processes. You know, I think we touched on this, Nick, when we did the other podcast. It's something that they tend to overlook more often than not. It comes back to that whole education piece was where the education is not there, but from an accounting perspective, more than happy to provide information to our clients when they ask for it. But at a bare minimum, I'd like for them to understand how their top line is, what their cost of sales is as a percentage of that top line, gross profit, overheads percentage, and what's your wages as a percentage of your sales, and then your net profit. So a few numbers, And I think we also focus too much on the profit sheet, profit and loss.
Yeah.
The balance sheet gets neglected. That's something that I feel the balance sheet is more the engine room of your business, because that's what drives everything in the P&L. And one of those questions that comes up at that AGM where they're like, oh, why do I have all this tax to pay? Oh, you see this director's loan over here that you've just been parking money against? It's not been offsetting any of the expenses. Oh, but I've been paying that to myself as an expense. I'm, a director. And it comes back to the whole rectifying something that's been done is a lot more difficult than proactively planning for it.
Absolutely. Ignorance is no defense in life or in the law. And to just complain that schools don't teach us this stuff is not going to get you anywhere, listeners. So you need to educate yourself. No, you don't need to know tax law inside out. That's what Rakesh does. And also the structures and everything else that we've talked about in today's episode. And just abdicating, just handballing stuff to an accountant and then blaming them when things don't work out the way you want, I think is pretty childish, to be honest. So you should school yourself up, gang. And you should also work with great advisors. Rakesh is wearing a hoodie, so he must be a good dude.
Can I just point out that Rakesh has got life figured out? He's in Brisbane where it's 32, feels like 35 degrees today, and he is wearing a hoodie in his office.
He's got cracking air on.
I don't have
it.
I'll tell you what it is. The folks that we're renting the office from, we had one of our AC units get nicked about 6 months ago. And they recently put the second unit in, and everyone that walks into the office has been complimenting on how cool it is in here. Like,
yep. They might be talking about you, Rakesh.
Maybe.
Making accounting cool. There you go. That you can use that slogan if you like, mate.
Making accounting great again.
Now, Rakesh, you mentioned before we hit record that you are releasing a book, and it's got nothing to do with prostitutes being very experienced. Well, maybe it does. I'm not sure.
Oh, it definitely doesn't. I've co-authored a book with my business partner, Jackson Milan. And this book is on the 7 secrets of creating financial freedom as a business owner.
Nice. So,
everything we've spoken about today will be covered off in the book. Be easy reading. We use some good examples and some real life case studies. So I encourage everyone to have a read.
Good stuff, mate. And where can people go to grab a copy of that, Rakesh?
Upon its release, I'll share those details with you. It should be coming out in the next month or so.
Nice.
But if you go to wealthhealthcheck.com.au, mm-hmm. You'll find an abundance of resources that will get you started along that journey.
Brilliant. Start your education, listeners. All right, you've been told. Go school yourself up. Check out Rakesh and obviously Jackson is a mate of ours. We've spoken to him on the podcast as well. Check out their stuff. These guys are the real deal. They wear hoodies and they sit in aircon in Brisbane. So,
Cassowaries.
Yeah, Chase Cassowaries. Rakesh, thanks so much for your time, mate. Thanks for making a dry topic a little less dry. And bringing a sense of humor to finance and numbers. It's been a refreshing change, mate. So thank you.
Thanks, Rakesh.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you very much.